Hello and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 128. And my screen just went black. The joys of live.
How good was that intro? It's like we actually came in and like 2 seconds before it's like, get headphones. What do you mean get headphones?
All right, start again. Take two. Welcome to Geek.
No, silence. Come on, let's do this properly.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 128 for the 16th of April, 2011. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by a headphoneless Josh Philpott.
How I am not headphoneless. I have them in my hands right now. They're just in a giant sea of cable mess because you didn't tell me I needed them.
Bear with us while we try and plug some headphones in.
This is just seriously, worst intro ever.
Oh, what the hell. It's the joy of live, people. We'll do it live, all right? All right, let me just give Josh some headphones here. There we go. Josh has got headphones. Good. All right, now, what is this show? This show is a complete disaster. That's what this show is.
What are we doing here?
All right. This is... Oh, look. Do I have... Yeah, no, I've got the right bug on screen. My God. We go out live, people, if you hadn't figured that out by now. We go out at 12 p.m., although it's 12:30 right now. Normally at 12 p.m. every Saturday, Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC plus 10. Go to geekactually.com/live, and you can enjoy all of this chaos live. Now... This is the new Geek Actually show. This is an amalgam show where we used to do a tech show. We used to do an after show. We kind of pushed them together and we came out with this. And,
yes,
you know,
and it got mushed into a giant, wonderful paste.
Do you really want me to go? Do you really want me to do it? I can do it. I'm sure I can come up with something.
No. We're okay.
All right. So... a lot of our links, in fact, probably about 99% of our links come from our researcher Delta Knight, David Murray, who is in our chat room, and he is also our wonderful moderator in our chat room. And
according to him, this is one of the best intros ever.
Oh, well, there you go. See, everybody, different strokes for different folks. Yeah. You know, I'm sure there are people who are listening to the podcast right now going, what the hell have I just downloaded? All right. We do a little bit of tech. We do a little bit of geek. Everything is kind of lighthearted. Everything is kind of geek related. Mm. We don't have any really serious deep stories this week, which is kind of nice. It makes a change, actually.
Yep.
But we do have some feedback, and I thought we'd start off with a little bit of feedback here. First one comes from our good friend Geek Betty. Geek Betty sent us this. It's actually basically a forward from a Twitter post, by the looks of it. It's a twit pic. Now, I'll put this link up in the chat room, and you guys can have a look at it for our audio listeners. Basically, I'm going to show Josh here. This person who is tweeting, was Cable M. Sasser, or at Cable, C-A-B-E-L, basically said, found this on TwitPic, placeholder string for a mysterious new fourth device, or is it my wishful thinking? This is from the App Store, the Apple App Store. And in the string, it actually says, suitable for iPod Touch, iPad, and ix.mac.marketingname.requires iOS 4.0 or later. So it's like, is this just wishful thinking or is there a new product? I actually think I have the answer for that already. My suspicion is it's supposed to be iPad 2.
Ah, right. Could be.
Because it says iPod Touch, iPhone, iPad, and I think probably it's meant to say iPad 2.
Yeah.
That would be my guess.
No, but if they were doing that, wouldn't they do the i...
Although this is April 14th, the iPad 2's been out for a while.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. It's a very interesting little find.
I'm going to look into that.
Something to keep
I'll
our
get
eyes
back
on.
To you, dude.
If there is a new Apple product showing up for
Allison
the App Store.
Thinks it's bad coding or lazy coding, and I tend to agree.
Yeah, probably.
But I will look into it either way.
That person, Callisynth, is from our chat room. And for those who are joining us for the first time, we go out live because we do have a chat room, and our chat room gets very vocal, and we will talk to them. And sometimes it'll sound like we're talking to some disembodied voice over here, but it's actually our chat room that we're referring to. And we love our chat room. Come and join us. The next email we have is from Mike. Now, Mike says, something to read when you are bored. And he put a link in here, which I have actually put in the show notes, I hope. Did I? Have a great day and keep up the work. Oh, sorry. That's film, actually. Ignore that one. We'll come back to that one in film, actually.
We're really well prepared.
We are. Actually, the rest are for film, actually. Now, we do have some others, though. Zed sent us a couple of links. Tristan sent us a couple links, and Zed sent us one link. Zed sent us a link from The Register. Now, he sent us a link from The Register, and I'm just loading up the link right now. Give me a second.
What is The Register?
It's a newspaper. I think it's a British newspaper,
from
memory. Right. I think. I could be wrong. Could be an American newspaper. Who knows? Oh, yes, yes. This is how I want to do politics.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, according to this article, this is not safe for work. We do carry an explicit tag, by the way, and for those who are watching video-wise,
boobies.
Our explicit tag does relate to the visual as well. A Menorcan political candidate has caused a bit of a rumpus ahead of Spain's forthcoming municipal elections with a seriously in-your-face advert in the local press.
Oh, dude, that's fantastic.
Sol Sanchez Mohammed, head of the Partit Democratic du, I'm not even going to try and pronounce these names, the PDC, basically, posed with an evidently willing pair of male hands to make her point, or rather, pair of points. The caption declares, two great arguments. And for our chat room, I have the picture here. For those who are listening to the audio podcast, follow the link. And this is her political campaign, guys. I got to say, I'm all for this political campaign.
That's, It's a very Ford campaign.
Yeah, I'm all there.
What is she trying to... What's the two great arguments?
To further her election cause, according to the Register, the wannabe mayoress of Ciutadella appeared in monthly magazine Mes Aires Menorca dressed only in her smalls while adopting sadomasochistic poses, which is what's on screen right now. Ms. Sanchez Mohammed's bare-chested political cheek hasn't gone down well with the
leverage.
No. No, you
really?
Think? And the problem is, with all of this, I actually still have no idea what her campaign is for. It's vote for me.
You kind of don't feel like, you don't feel like as a man you should really be the first one to bring up. So what are your political views?
James from Melbourne, our chat room, said she might lose a few female votes.
Yeah.
Yes, I would actually. Oh, and Callison in our chat room says because best mayors are the submissive ones. So I'm not sure exactly what her political stance is at this point, but I gotta say, I've never seen election posters like that here in Australia, and I think damn straight we should have more of those. I think we should have all of our.
I'm gonna play devil's advocate and say that
we've had political campaigns like this. We've had Tony Abbott running around in his Speedos.
Oh, don't ever bring that up again. I don't want those words ever used in the same sentence ever again.
So thank you, Zed, for sending that through. That just tickled me.
Now, I don't know whether I'm going to say thanks for that, Zed.
Oh, no, that tickled me. I like the fact that she actually bears to have her nipples there. It's not that she's covered. Her nipples are poking through, you know?
Yeah, it's a very Ford campaign.
It is. And I love the fact that it doesn't actually say anything. It's just boobs. It's like, boobs, vote for me. Boobies!
In the face.
Delta says he's glad Julia Gillard didn't do that. I don't know. Julia Gillard's got a rack.
Okay, moving along before we cause any more trouble.
All right, so Tristan sent us these two gems. This first one is actually a video. And now, once again, the link is in our show notes, and you can actually go and have a look at our show notes to see these in detail. But we're going to play a little bit of this video. Now, the video is actually... there's no talking in it or anything like that, so we'll explain what's happening here. But this guy has actually built himself his own Rock'em Sock'em robot.
No way.
Yeah, check it out. So here he is fighting his own Rock'em Sock'em robot. And I guess it's, you know, it's a boxing trainer, but it really isn't particularly accurate. It's just kind of flailing its arms.
But, like, dude, as someone that's done boxing, like, it's an early concept design for sure, but I like what he's doing with it. It's like, it's that concept that basically it's avoiding the punches and throwing a punch through. I think that's a really cool design.
Then he speeds it up.
Yeah.
I wonder how hard that would actually hit you.
It'd be hard enough that I think it would get in your way, and that's mainly what you're doing. It's like it's a great tool for people that want to learn to box, because it's like there's, as someone that's done it, the number one moment that scares people when they're actually boxing is when you go from going punch, 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 punch on a bag, and then you go up against someone and they go punch, and just all of a sudden people are like, ah, I've been hit. And it's like something like that would probably make the transition a little smoother.
So the website...
I can't wait for the next one, which swings...
Well, what you need is it to have some sort of random generator where it can actually swing in random...
Right now it only does that, but it's obviously got the high bollocks to actually be able to do that.
At the moment, it literally does Rock'em Sock'em Robot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, give it some time and, you know, they can add a few other things. I think it's great.
Chris from Bris Vegas says we should stick Anthony Mundine's head on it.
Oh, dude.
All right. The other one that came from Tristan, which I think is, this is my favorite. Yeah. This is a YouTube video that you can find. The link is in the show notes. And so I do have a suggest go having a look at it. But for Josh's and our chat room's purpose, I'll play the video in the background. This is a guy who actually made a light cycle board game for his children.
Awesome.
And it's actually all lit by UV light. Check this out. This is actually awesome. I want one of these. So I want one. I want one of these sets. All right. So here's his setup. It's a great looking board. And it's all made out of Perspex and so forth. And so I assume there must be some sort of dice system or something to actually make movement. But see, you actually put the Perspex pieces down for the jet streams.
That's awesome.
How awesome does that look? That is fantastic. Beautifully designed. Freak in our chat room said, I want one!
Oh, different colors and everything.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Isn't that hot? They should make this game. They should license this and make this game. I reckon, although it's kind of ironic, isn't it, that it's a computer game that we've turned into a board game.
But it looks amazing.
Look at it. It's got the ramps and the jumps and everything.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That's a cool idea and very well put together. The man deserves a lot of credit.
Absolutely. So thank you very much, Tristan, for sending those. So if you have things that you want to send to us, little things that catch your eye or you think are kind of geeky and you think we would appreciate it, send them to feedback@geekactually.com. But please, there's a caveat to this. First of all, I need to have emails in at the latest by Thursday afternoon to be included in this week's show. I had emails coming in last night at 11 o'clock at night, and it was lucky that I happened to be working on the show and I put stuff in. But if you miss the deadline, it may have to be shuffled to the next show because it just gets too hard to try and put them in. And the second caveat, because there's actually one that kind of confused me, you need to put in the subject line which show it's for. Okay, because the feedback line is for both shows, and we may have to set up two individual. We're getting so much email, we may have to set up two accounts.
Wow.
At the moment, it's feedback. So just put in the subject line, Geek Actually or Film Actually, and then the subject line, and then put your body. So just so we know which show to shuffle it onto, because there's actually one email that I have here, which I think might be for the Geek Show, but we've already got the story in the Film Show, so I've kind of shuffled it, and I don't know where to put it, so I'm kind of sitting on the wall. But let's move on. We have geek tech news to talk about, and for our impending robot apocalypse news, and I really tried to get a clip of the film, but everything just got a little bit too late, so I didn't get a chance. But for those who have seen the film Runaway, the Tom Selleck movie, with the little robot spiders, this freaked me out. This is from Gizmodo. This is a new robot that's coming out called the Hexapod.
The Hexapod.
The Hexapod robot kit that you can build for yourself. And you tell me if this doesn't bring back memories of Tom Selleck's Runaway. Okay, ready? Does this not just look like those little robot spider things tapping along the ground?
Dude, that's so creepy.
Watch it when it sits up. It actually does this kind of little dance thing in a moment. For those who are watching, the link is in our chat room. The link is in our show notes for those who are listening, I should say. For those who are watching, look at this. Yeah. This is actually...
What you need to do is put blades or some, like, syringic needles on it or something like that. And
this video has been heavily abridged. If you actually go watch the whole video, it actually, like, rears up at one point like a spider. And it's just creepy. It's just,
in the best kind of ways.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is actually a kit that you can buy. It'll be made available. I think it's in May it's coming out. And you can build it. And they actually do, in the video, you can actually see they're actually pushing weight down on it to show you how strong it is.
Oh, wow.
And the whole bit. So it is actually very, very strong. It's a creepy looking thing. And, you know, all I can think is get a bunch of those. You put the syringe in them, like in Runaway, and you have them controlled by that DARPA supercomputer that can think, you know, we got it. There you go. These are more infiltration units.
Yay.
All you need now is to put softer pads on it so it can actually pad its way around, you know?
And allow it to be able to crawl on roofs and things like
that. I tell you, this robot apocalypse is coming. It is coming. All right, let's talk about some slightly more realistic news, though. Little Nike shoes, says James from Melbourne. All right. IT Wire has an article this week, which is very interesting, which is that the NBN Co., our national broadband network that is being rolled out here in Australia for our international listeners, they have announced the Big 12 retail service providers who are NBN ready. And they are going to be the first ones to roll out. And it was what was most interesting about this was that in the first four, the big four, one was absent, which was Optus. They are now apparently available already because they're on the list of 12. But when the first list came out, there was the four big ones: Telstra, iiNet, iPrimus, funnily enough, was actually in that first four, but Optus wasn't. And it was very odd that they weren't ready and everybody else was. But anyway, so the list is, and if you are an Australian who wants to get onto the NBN and you are not with one of these service providers, just be aware that if you are with a smaller service provider, you may have to wait a little bit longer because we said there's pricing differences. But the first 12 retail service providers for the NBN will be AAPT, AARNet, Comcenter, Exatel, iiNet, Internode, iPrimus, NextGen, Networks Optus, Platform Networks, SkyMesh. And
SkyMesh?
SkyMesh. I've never heard of them. Do you know what's interesting about this list?
What?
Where is Telstra?
Maybe Telstra's just...
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And Telstra.
And Telstra. Right.
Okay. There you go. And Telstra 12. Okay. All right. So that's your list. So if you aren't with one of those service providers, you may be at the back end of getting the NBN. Now, this is also kind of all up in the air anyway, because the NBN isn't ready to roll out yet anyway. I mean, it's not ready for service. But these people are apparently certified as NBN ready.
Cool.
So... and where is TPG, somebody just said. Very interesting point.
Yeah.
so just like, kind of like a public service announcement.
Yeah, for you there. Just letting you know in case you weren't yet aware.
I would say TPG won't be far behind if they're not on that list. Dodo is not there. Yes, somebody has pointed out that, two people pointed out that, oh no, James just said Dodo twice. And as Northy points out, your taxpayer dollars paid for the NBN, you might as well use it.
Absolutely.
You know? And you're going to get speeds like you've never seen before. So, okay. Now, this one is kind of up Josh's wheelhouse. We had a long talk about this yesterday, but I thought we'd bring this up because it's just, it tickles me. After months of battle, months of playing chicken with each other, George Hotz, or Geo Hot as he is known, has settled with Sony over this jailbreaking of the PlayStation 3. Now, what's interesting about this is apparently they settled very quietly 11 days ago. And nothing was really said. Now, they've settled away from courts. They've settled privately. We don't know all the details about it, but what we do know apparently is that there is an injunction that George Hotz will not make public his code, which, for those who have been following this, know that he hasn't made it public for months now. It's been off his site. And Sony will no longer pursue the case, right? So now, this is what makes me think it's like a game of chicken. To me, this sounds like Sony just rolled over. Yeah. To me, it just sounds like Sony just blinked.
Yeah.
Because if they really thought they had a case, they would roast this kid. I don't think they have a case.
No, that, and they probably think that the world will just uproar if you try to do that, because realistically, the rest of the world looks at it and goes, it doesn't matter if you win, it's still not fair.
Yeah, and you're the big corporate bastards who did this to him.
Yeah.
Especially considering that he's in the U.S., and according to the Library of Congress in the U.S., jailbreaking your devices is not illegal. It's not.
And this is one thing I'm really starting to struggle with, man, because it's like, where does the line stop? Because Apple's been up in arms about their whole jailbreaking phones and stuff.
I believe
like
they called
this,
it a matter of national security at one point.
Which is fantastic, how they thought they were going to get away with that, I don't know. But what I'm getting sick of, man, is I don't get how this is still a legitimate cause to actually argue. Computers have and always will be something you purchase and you own a device. I have with me an Asus notebook. Now, if I want to put Linux on this, if I want to put Windows, if I want to use it to do whatever I want, I could fucking use it for whatever I want.
Absolutely.
It's a computer. And the fact that you can turn around and label something an iPhone or whatever, and then all of a sudden it becomes a device unable to be broken. No, I'm sorry. This is getting stupid. And game consoles are no different. Games consoles from 10 years ago had one purpose and one purpose alone. They couldn't do anything else because they were only built to function yes. one way. These are computers now. They're running cores, they're running RAM, they're running video cards. They are my device. And I don't get how they ever should be allowed the right to tell me I can't do something.
The only thing
that
they have the right to issue dictatorship type instructions about is their network. They can set whatever rules they want about their gaming networks because yep. that's theirs.
And if you've got legitimate cause to prove that someone is copying games, then you go fight them for stealing games, for stealing software. The fact that someone creates an ability to open up that is like saying that because I have Windows installed, I can hack programs and put games on illegally. So therefore, my computer should be taken away from me. It's not a legal course of action. It's like if I unlock the device and allow myself to do something with it, you have no rights to flick on.
Absolutely agreed. No, I absolutely agree. And I think what's happened here is that Sony's realized that. And I think their legal team has probably said, you know, if we actually take this to court, and hear me out on this, if we actually take this to court and we lose,
yep.
this is going to set a precedent for everybody to be able to do this. Also, this code that we are trying to suppress from Geo Hotz or from George Hotz will become public record if this goes to court. So suddenly, Sony, I think, is starting to wake up to the fact that this may not be such a good strategical move on a case that they may not win.
Exactly. And if they don't win, then unlocking your consoles becomes a legal thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think that they're just afraid to actually get into that.
I agree. So I think good old George Hotz over here, basically, in one way, he dodged a bullet. In one way, he's dodged a bullet. In another way, if he was older and wiser, he may have actually pushed this harder. You know what I mean?
Well, look, I mean, we've already found out that Anonymous are not giving up yet, so...
Well, that's the second part of the story, and I thought this was very funny, was the fact that Sony actually did go to lengths in their statement that they made to actually say that it had nothing to do with Anonymous. Which is a very strange, thing for them to say, and I'm not hammering Anonymous at all.
Hey, Sony, you may not be aware of this, but the rest of the world is. Anonymous are a deadly force you don't mess with.
That's right.
Now, we all know that, so don't try and lie to us. We know you're in trouble right
so,
now.
So, as soon as Anonymous started to attack Sony on George Hotz's behalf, Sony started to go, wait a minute.
Man, my hair, I just can't do anything about that. It's like sticking up on every angle.
But you could look like that, so it's all right.
I do look like that.
So I'm pointing to a picture of George Hotz, who's got a bit of messy hair. He's got the Harry Potter hair. All right, so I think Sony kind of blinked. They played chicken. They blinked. It's over. Yep. Show's over, folks. Move on. Question is, who will be the next hacker to throw up some unlock code? It's going to happen again now. Yep. And somebody who has George Hotz's code in particular, who got it while it was up, and watched this thing start to mirror all over the internet now. Now that the cat's out of the bag, I don't think... and Callisynth in our chat room says, I hate Anon's tactics, but he tends to agree with their policies. And
that's the problem. We actually had this exact conversation. They are the modern-day Robin Hood. That's what they do.
And well, they're like a consumer watchdog is what they're like.
Yeah, and look, I mean, it's that kind of it's the same sort of belief as kind of like vigilante justice. You know, like it's you don't want to agree with it because if they even start to deviate slightly from what they should be doing, chaos erupts.
You have to ask yourself this as well. One person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's a hard call. Let's not forget that when America had its revolution in 1776, they were terrorists.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and their tactics were terror tactics to make it all happen. But then they became freedom fighters because they were on the side of right. And they won. So...
And
yeah,
history,
it's a hard call.
History only ever remembers the people that get to the end.
That actually reminds me. That's actually a very good point. History is written by the winners.
Yeah, exactly.
We actually had like mock warfare way back in university many years ago. And it was really wonderful because we actually won this particular battle. And we were up against a group called Alf's Army. And in the university newspaper, Alf's Army went to them and talked about their decisive victory and everything else. And we said, wait, we won. And they said, yeah, but we made it to the media first. So, you know, that's the way it is. History is written by the victor. What can I tell you?
Exactly.
Or the person who gets the media first. Anyway, let's move on and say, is it just me, Josh? And I don't have a picture for our chat room, but the link is in our show notes. Follow this link and have a look, because Microsoft Windows 8, there's more and more movement on Windows 8 happening.
Oh, awesome, yes.
But Windows 8 is going to have the Windows 8 App Store. Doesn't it look a little bit familiar?
Yeah.
It's looking a little familiar.
Yeah, look, the App Store system is something that I want everybody to be aware of. Like, I just need you all to think about one thing from now on. This is just a public service announcement to every geek that's out there. App stores are wrong, okay? Now, I'm happy to use them, but realistically, it means you're stuck with one company and one style of doing things. If you buy the piece of software off that, you have to use the App Store to get it back. You have to be interacting with the App Store. And also,
what makes that different from Steam?
With games and stuff like that, fine. You can still get the copy other ways, man. The problem is that if we keep allowing this, it's going to basically become the only way we can do things. And then the idea of freeware software requires you to go through the App Store.
Not necessarily, because as an example, most of the apps that are up on the Apple App Store at the moment all have their own sites, and you can still buy it outside of the App Store. The convenience of buying it in the App Store is why you do it. But what a lot of the developers have started to do, which I think is very interesting, is that they have started to offer specials outside of the App Store. So somebody just came online. So as an example, there's a piece of software that I use for this show, one of the many pieces of software. And if I go buy it through the App Store, it's $29.95. Yeah. If I go to the actual website, I can do an upgrade option because I have a previous version and that's only $9.95.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, that I agree with what Kellison's saying. Steam is an app for... what was it that he said? I'll use the exact thing. Steam is an app store that sells games. Yes. I agree. The only problem that I have with this is the more that we head towards this world, the more that we are stuck in the infrastructure, and we are basically getting back to the concept that we were just talking about with the devices, which is that I believe in a freeware world, and I believe in the concept of setting up my device how I want it,
mm-hmm.
and where I want it, and how I want things to do. And app stores are doing the complete opposite to this. And it's like, look, it's just sour grapes. I'm well aware of that. You know me. I'm the guy that does this. I'm the guy that stands up and say I don't like the fact that iPad 2 comes out and is basically the same but slightly more powerful and reworked in the wrong ways. It's my same thing with the app stores. I'm just having a rant to say to people that the more we invite this kind of a world, the less you can use your computer how you want to. Basically,
yeah, I'm not sure if I actually entirely agree.
And you never do.
No, but I got to say, I've actually been using the Mac App Store a little bit on our Macs up here, and there is a really nice feeling about not having to worry about serial numbers for one, because it's all just straight download from
my
the App
God,
Store.
You mean I have to read a number out off the back of a piece of paper?
But here's the trick. Once I've bought that app, it is now available for all of my Macintosh devices, where it isn't if you buy it under terms and condition for... if you buy it as a standalone app, you key in your number. That is your serial number. It's locked to that one machine. Yes, everybody goes and puts it on other machines.
You know that there's certain apps that can't do that. Like, as an example, if you were going to go with something like Photoshop, you still only get your two licenses.
Not through the App Store. Through the App Store, the term and condition of the Apple App Store is, once it has been purchased in the Apple App Store, it is available to all computers.
Then I really hope that these companies don't go with it.
Because, as an example, if I download or buy the $99 Pro app, Aperture, on the App Store, I can then install it on this machine here, go to my laptop.
Up to five computers.
No five computer limit. As many computers as I have that are registered to me, my computers, I can put it on any machine that
I
own.
How would this not lead to mass piracy?
Well, because you can't pirate it, because you have to log into the App Store to get it.
But you can only have five... So why can't I just give my account to everyone in the world?
Well, I think theoretically if Apple starts seeing your serial number being logged in by multiple machines all around the world, they're going to say there's something up
so
here.
So wait, I would have imagined it would be the same system as it was with iTunes, which is that you get five computers. You have to go into the computer and authorize the computer for the computer to be able to use the software.
App Store has never asked for authorization. It's never asked for authorization. I've used it on five machines. I have five Macs in this house.
Yes, but that's five.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's never asked me to authorize any of those other Macintoshes.
Mm.
It's just I log into the App Store with my credentials. I say that it gives me my list of software that's available. I say download. It downloads it. And that's it. It's done. And I think that is a really, really convenient thing. Then also through the App Store, just like with the iTunes App Store for the iOS devices, all of those apps are maintained and updated through that App Store. So it just comes up in the icon saying we've got an update for that software. You just click on it and it just pulls it straight down. There is an advantage to the App Store.
Look, there are a lot of advantages, dude. And you
I don't see, and I see this is where I disagree with you, because I don't see a difference between, because we had this argument the other day about Steam and this software you don't really own anymore, because if you know, physical media is gone and suddenly you're locked into this one ecosystem and you don't really actually own this piece of software anymore.
But that's not true, because as an example, if I buy a game from Steam, because this is how I actually have Crysis installed on my computer, I bought Crysis through Steam, used the serial code and used the disks I have at home to install it, so it's not in Steam. It's actually outside Steam.
Yeah, but you have the disk, but if you bought it on Steam...
If I use any sort of ISO,
if you didn't buy a physical media, if you didn't have a physical media at all, if you just bought a piece of software on Steam, download it on your machine. You can download it on any machine you want.
But it's not my copy of Steam, dude. I just used a friend's CD to install it so that I didn't have to download the 6 gigs. I used the CD serial key, the same serial key that I would have got if I bought it in the box, off my Steam account and used that to activate
it. I still think there is no difference between... If you have, as an example, my iLife suite is an upgraded iLife suite that I bought on physical disk. Mm. The App Store sees that and actually has them all listed as installed and updates those bits of software because I already have them installed. Mm.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying I'm completely against the man. It's just that it's just if we move to just this sort of a system, it's like people are less and less likely to put up things elsewhere. Like, why would you bother to have it on a site if it was in the App Store, if the App Stores get too large? And then basically we just cut out the content that most people...
What's this?
Chris from Bris Vegas is saying, in our chat room saying, guys, we should have an App Store debate.
Absolutely.
He says,
we should probably put this to bed because we're going to talk about this.
He says,
a show
dedicated to the topic. There is so much to talk through. Do you know what? That is a brilliant idea, and we haven't done a special this month yet. Let's set this up. We will do an App Store debate, and we will open the phone lines.
Absolutely.
And we'll let everybody have their say on this. And this will be App Store. When we say App Store, we're talking about iOS, Windows apps, Mac apps, Steam, anything that is online media store.
Yeah.
You know? And we'll say, not necessarily music. That's a whole different issue. Just keep it to software at this point. But okay, we will come back to this. We have differences of opinions. At this point, though, the point of this original story was that Windows 8 is going to carry its own App Store. Mm. Now, the two points about
Android. Don't forget Android.
Android Marketplace is there as well. Mm. Yes, absolutely.
Android
Marketplace is there. But what I think is funny about the Windows 8 App Store is the fact that they're calling it the App Store. So right there, you know that they are baiting Apple.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that it looks almost exactly like the Apple
in the best kind of way. It's like they're not even pulling punches on it. They're just like, hey, guess what? We didn't win, so... We're just going to have an App Store as well.
You know, James from Melbourne's made a very interesting point. He says, no, a lot of geeks may use it, but a lot of geeks are about 1% of the buying populace. That's actually probably a very interesting point there. Yes, we'll come back to that. All right, so we will set this up. We'll let you know. Follow me on Twitter, at David McVeigh on Twitter. And when we have this show set up, we will set it up. It won't be on a Saturday. It'll probably be in an evening or something like that.
Yeah.
And we'll see if we can actually set up a proper debate on this. We might even see if we can get a couple other people in here. Yeah. What do you reckon?
Yeah, absolutely, Dave.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do. All right, so moving on for the moment. What time is it? Oh, my God, we're already half an hour in.
We just spent quite a while talking about that.
Okay. Apple has been hiring.
Okay.
Now, this is actually kind of interesting because one of the hires from Apple is an Australian guy. Now, I didn't capture the ad because it's kind of painful. But for those who have seen the – it's one of the chip ads with the guy. He's a comedian. He's sitting there with all the hot chicks, and they're all talking about, like, philosophy and something. They start talking about how the chips taste better because they're you know, baked or whatever it is. It's a crappy ad. But it's for – I think it's Lay's or something like that. He's been hired. His name is Andy McKeon, and he's been hired to go to Apple in California to be their new creative director of advertising.
Oh, great.
So my question is, I don't know if he's going to get away with putting hot chicks in Apple ads. I don't think that's quite their modus operandi. But
well, they'll just, you know, look like they're having fun and that they're not just selling their bodies, and then it'll be okay.
And they'll put some indie music in the background.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They'll be at an indie club all wearing tight pants.
All right. The other person who was hired by Apple this week was a person. Where are we? Hold on. A person who is a carbon fiber specialist.
Yeah.
His name is Kevin Kenny, and he is a senior composites engineer. Now, Apple has had a dream for a long time, apparently, of making a carbon fiber body for their mobile devices.
Yeah.
They believe a carbon fiber body will give them better better antenna receiving and so forth, which they're right. I mean, if you're not encasing it in metal, you're going to get much better reception. So this guy has been brought in.
And also, carbon fiber is usually lighter as well.
It'll be lighter. It's strong, you know, a lot of factors. And so there is a lot of talk that the next iPhone and iPad may have carbon fiber bodies. And that's why this guy has been brought in. We'll see. Now, Apple has also said that one of their ideas has been for a long time is to get wireless syncing going. Their argument why they haven't had wireless syncing up until now has been that reception hasn't been strong enough for the amount of data that has to go. And all I can say is, did they actually ever use a Zune?
Yeah.
Zunes have had wireless syncing for ages, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, but the point is, this is why they want to make carbon fiber bodies. Now they have a specialist in there who's actually working on it, so we'll see. But the one that I thought was really interesting was that they may also have some old blood returning. Apparently Steve Wozniak has made some hints lately that he might be interested in coming back to Apple. This is the man who actually invented the Apple II computer, the engineer who built it. Now, Steve Wozniak is prone to do a lot of chatting, and he's a really nice guy, really sweet. He did help. He was the co-founder of Apple in 1976, and he was asked a question whether he would consider coming back to Apple, and he said, yeah, I consider it. He said the 60-year-old computer engineer said in an interview recently, he said that he could be more open. His comment about Apple was he believes that it could be more open and not lose sales.
Well, this has been my argument. It's just that things like the App Store and stuff like that are a bit closed, and I think it's still in its teething points. It's just because it's becoming. I'm just the guy that always turns around and says if you give somebody too much power, things start getting awkward. And it's one of those things where the App Store is booming so heavily.
Well, you know exactly why they want the App Store. Because at the moment they
30%?
Have a, well, they have a complete, no, not just 30% control. They have a completely controlled environment on iOS,
and they are,
and they don't have a controlled environment on Mac because anybody can write Mac software. If they make it App Store to get your stuff in there, then they completely control the ecosystem.
Absolutely, which is why I've never liked it. But anyway,
and I don't want them to completely control. And this is why I like the idea that you can buy it outside or you can buy it in the App Store, but, like, depending on what you want.
What's to stop them eventually just saying no?
Well, that's what was then exactly Leo Laporte's argument.
Anyway,
that was exactly Leo Laporte's argument many months ago.
We will get back into this when we do this thing later.
Anyway, so Steve Wozniak, I doubt, will come back to Apple somehow. I mean, he left before Jobs did, way back in the day.
Yeah.
He, at the time, apparently was not quite happy with the way Apple was doing business and the way, you know,
Oh, no, I got no idea what he's talking about.
The competition of the Mac department, the Macintosh department back in 84 and all this sort of stuff. And he left to do his own thing. Now, Steve Wozniak is a fun guy. He's a genius. I mean, if you've read his book, I Was, the man is a genius. And I think Apple would benefit from having that sort of humanity in the company, and that's exactly why he won't be in the company.
People like me would trust it a bit more if I could actually believe what was in there, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I like the fact that James from Melbourne says, I'm pretty sure Apple is good at doing business. Oh, I don't think there's any doubt there.
Not what I mean by that.
Considering that on the one of the more recent NASDAQ calls, the top 12 or what it was, Apple beat Microsoft in percentage.
Wow.
And Apple is not, and they're sitting on cash. Apple is sitting on something like $60 billion in cash or something at the moment. This company knows how to do business. There's no doubt about that. Whether or not their business is the way of the future or not, that's a whole different issue. Yeah. And you know what? That's the funny thing, is it may be the way of the future. It may be the way people want to go. All right, let's move on and say, oh, DARPA, those maniacs of death. let's talk about DARPA for a minute and say that they have a new experiment coming up, which I think is hotness. You know the drones?
Yeah.
The I forget what they're actually called. The those pilotless drones they send in with rockets and spy drones and all that sort of stuff. Those things are awesome. But they have a problem. Because they are pilotless, they are dealing with a lot of red tape to make one of those missions happen, because they have the satellite picks up the information that they want. It has to come back. It has to get approved. It has to be confirmed. It goes through the next level, and then the pilot basically flies it in. They have to have a look to reconnoiter it, you know, and so forth, before a kill order can be given.
Yeah, yeah.
DARPA has an idea and says, why not put the pilot right on the ground right there? So there is no red tape. They can see exactly what's going on, and the remote control is the helmet. So basically it's a full 3D heads-up helmet display, and the pilot who's controlling that drone would be watching exactly what's going on. He'd be on the ground watching exactly what's happening. Cool. And these drones would basically be in the air, and if a call is made that they need to bring in a strike, he would activate whatever the closest drone is, take control, and fly it in. And I think that is just amazing. These helmets are basically the same kind of idea as a heads-up display in current fighters and stuff like that, but much more complicated. And they basically be able to see what the drone is seeing, you know? So I think that's pretty interesting stuff. This is all kind of warfare, I know, and it's not to everybody's cup of tea, but I like the technology behind it. I think the technology is amazing.
Yeah.
While we're talking about DARPA, you geeks can help them out. Now, I'm going to read from this article because I want to make sure I get all the facts right for you guys. This is from Gizmodo. Now, they have a simulator. Now, it's called, it says, so the graphic realism isn't quite Black Ops. But this military sim will actually influence real-world naval operations in the future. Fancy yourself a suave military gaming technician. Is prestige level 24 starting to bore you on Black Ops? DARPA wants to put your strategic savviness to real military use by integrating its anti-submarine warfare, ASW, continuous trail unmanned vessel, ACTUV. They love their acronyms, don't they? Configurations into the sub-hunting simulator game Dangerous Waters. Download and play the game, and your tactical prowess may just be implemented into the ACTUV's prototype software. So basically what happens is you play the game, and then you submit your results to DARPA.
That's so cool.
So the link for this...
It's so wrong.
It's so wrong, but it's so good. So this is crowdsourcing on a pretty major level here, all right? So the link for this will be in our show notes. So if you feel like actually playing a submarine simulator and knowing that your results may actually go to DARPA, it could be kind of fun. And I believe it's free. So the link will be there, right there in the show notes for you. Okay? Now, speaking of firepower, but not necessarily DARPA, we're still on war here, dude. We've got frickin' laser beams. We talked about this a few weeks ago, and we said the Navy was developing this I think it was a 16-kilowatt laser.
Yeah.
I have some video here. Have a look at this. This is the Navy actually test firing the laser. And this is awesome. It's a bit slow moving. It's only 16 kilowatts after all, but there you go. There's it hitting its target. And bingo. Bingo bango. Disabled engine.
That's freaking cool.
Yeah, I love the fact you can't see the beam or anything. That's like invisible death. You know?
It's on fire.
You betcha.
So cool.
We got freaking laser beams. How long until they mount them on sharks' heads? Freaking laser beams. All right, so there you go. There's the Navy laser
weapon.
Oh,
God, is it sinking? Was that? No. Okay. No.
I think it was trying to get away.
Both
engines on now. Now, the admiral that was doing this test, apparently, I don't have that article in front of me, but I did hear about it on Buzz Out Loud the other day. Apparently, he's quoted as saying, yeah, it's okay, but I want the megawatt laser, which I think is fabulous. So we still don't know whether or not these anti-laser shields, things that we talked about a few weeks ago would work, if you remember those. So.
Yeah.
But there you go. There's some freaking laser beams.
I just love the fact that the guy comes out and says it like that, though. He's just like, I won't be satisfied until...
Give me a laser of death.
Yeah, he's like, I don't just want a simple one. I just want something that can demolish countries. And I'm just like, you know what? That man's probably in the right place right now.
All right, now, for something a little bit more homegrown, or a little bit not homegrown, it was actually in Europe, but a little bit more down to earth, let's get away from weapons for a minute and say, you know that 3DS device?
Yeah.
Everybody's buying it because it's got like the glasses-free 3D. Well, I'm going to play you some video here for our chat room, and the video is on our show notes. This is the iPad version, but it's also an iPhone 4 as well. This is glasses-free 3D on an iPad. There you go. And there you go. And you can actually see that it's got the three dimensions. How are they making this work, everybody may be asking? It's actually using head tracking software off the front-facing camera.
It's an all right idea, but it's not very... It's
pretty good.
There we go. It's getting better.
On the Retina display on the iPhone, it looks awesome.
Yeah.
It works even better. There's actually this example that we're playing here in the chat room. Actually, they have the X version. It's like the coordinate version. And then they actually show you a menu screen done in 3D, which is pretty special. But so basically, it's got to be programmed in. It's not like the lenticular screen. This is a programmed 3D. But there
well, it's a real fuck you to Nintendo.
It is kind of, isn't it?
No. Considering all those pictures that you saw on screen were Wii Mii's.
Yes, there you go.
So it's that's guess what? We did it better than you.
That's the 3D target, and that shows that one. There it is, just sitting on a table. And I think it's really quite amazing when you think that it's not just head tracking because there's a camera there. So it is actually, it's following something.
Yeah.
Look at the menu screen.
That's a cool concept.
That's pretty wild.
That has real merit. Everyone that's watching, listening to the show right now should go check this out.
Yeah, and there's a cube, the classic cube test.
Yeah.
So basically, we may be seeing this. This isn't out yet. This is only in testing phase. But I think in the next 6 months, we're going to see...
That's fantastic.
Some 3D apps show up.
Well, dude, even 3DU, like that there is a much better system to use than what we're using currently.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole thing with lenticular screens and all this, this is literally head tracking your head, you know? So I think that's really interesting. The article is actually from Gizmodo that I'm quoting from, and it's they're university software developers who have cooked this up. It says here, it's a pretty clever use of the iPad 2's new front-facing camera and, of course, the iPhone 4. It says, tracking your face to create the illusion of depth. It's not real 3D, but it's pretty damn cool looking. It's not real. I mean, the 3DS is actually a real 3D. This is not. This is a simulation, but it is pretty glam.
To your eyes, both of them are fake 3D anyway.
Yeah,
so it's just the trick
of
the eyes.
It's an optical trick.
Exactly. So realistically, it's as real as the lenticular is.
Does it play Street Fighter, though, is what Cal said.
We'll get it there eventually.
It will. That's right. Freak has pointed out. We see in stereo and one camera doesn't. So we need to trick the eyes into seeing stereo. Damn. We need to turn a two-dimensional image trick it into seeing a three-dimensional image.
Absolutely.
Okay, so where are we? Oh, my God, we're running over today.
It's your fault.
I know. It's always my fault. Do we want to talk about Intel's new processor?
Yes.
Okay. Intel's developed a new processor. Okay, let's move on.
What's it do?
Intel has basically conceded the fact that they are behind in the tablet market.
Yes.
They're being slaughtered.
Yeah.
They have come out with a new processor called the Oak Trail processor, and they also have a new next-generation Atom processor called the Cedar Trail.
They're going to need that one because, I'm sorry, but AMD are destroying you right
now. Yeah, absolutely, and it doesn't look like these are going to be their saving grace yet. It says here that the biggest concerns about the new processors were being able to do all things like HDMI out, full flash support, video decoding, and so forth.
Really?
That they've managed to do.
All those things that AMD already does?
That's right. This is what I'm saying.
Intel's not 1080p
Intel is
output.
Intel is playing catch up here.
Yeah.
The one thing that they haven't been able to do is quite match battery life. It says they've got much better battery life, but it says, will we see 30-day standby batteries that is the hallmark of things like iPads?
Mm.
No.
No.
No. it says the other ARM-based tablets still beat them on that. These tablets, and to make matters worse, Intel is still behind because when will these chips start to hit? Oh, in the next 12 months. So by then, we'll be seeing ARM and so forth going way far ahead of that anyway.
Yeah.
So Intel, you know, stick with the desktops at this point. Your mobile devices, your mobile processors are behind. And you may be playing. You know what? We may finally be seeing that division.
No, I think what we're finally seeing is some other companies come to the table and actually have a chance to get up because AMD, Intel are just the squishes.
But this is what I was about to say. These processor companies, since the early days of computers, since way back in the 90s when the two major companies started to really battle it out, we've been seeing them play leapfrog.
Yeah.
One gets a faster processor, the next one beats it. One gets a faster processor, the next one beats it, and so forth. They've been playing leapfrog. I think we're actually finally starting to see the divide.
Well, not only that, we're seeing the divide happen in a different way, because it's always been about power. It's been about getting better power, better power, better power, better power. And then somebody came out on a side note like Apple and went, hey, we're going to create this, which has a great battery life and also has a decent processing power and stuff. And Intel kind of went, well, we don't care. We're up for power, 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 power,
power, power.
And then
right.
AMD's kind of stood in the middle and gone, wait, that's actually probably a good place to go. They've gone over and gone, let's make that and keep making the power. And it's like all the time Intel started to lose.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that Intel dominates the desktop market.
Dude, there is an i5 processor in this laptop and it is fantastic.
Yeah, there's no doubt they dominate the desktop and laptop market. Absolutely. Things that can get plugged in and need power, mm-hmm. Intel dominates, right?
Absolutely.
i5s, i7s, I mean, when they first hit the markets with the Core 2 Duos, you know, they're powerhousing through. Yep. But they are, I think the divide has now come. The other companies have found their niche. The other companies have discovered that they can slaughter Intel in mobile. And that's what's happening. And I think Intel needs to give up on this and basically say, we'll stick with power. Because that's what we do, you know? And you got to play to your strengths. You know, you play to your strengths. Now, this is just kind of a public service announcement. I am actually thinking about trying to pick one of these up for the show, just because we talk about Android a lot and we don't really have an Android device to really play with. Mm-hmm. If you want to throw some donations in to help us pick this up, it doesn't come out till May. But Kogan is releasing a budget tablet, a budget Android tablet. It is actually carrying a 1 gigahertz Samsung processor. It's called the Agora tablet. It's 7 inches, includes 4 gigabytes of onboard storage, micro SD, offering up to an additional 32 gigabytes, 1024x600 capacitive touch screen, wireless G, HDMI, USB ports, and a front-facing 1.3 megapixel camera. Look, it sounds like a decent enough little tablet, and for testing purposes, don't think it's something I would use on a day-to-day basis. But for whenever we need to hit the Android marketplace or anything like that and find out what's going on in the world of Android.
Absolutely.
For $149, that's the cheapest tablet on the market.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt about it. So I think that might be the way to go. But as I say, at this moment, I can't afford it, but it may be something we look into grabbing for the show. We have one here on the desktop and we can use.
Yeah.
So that's kind of just public service. Let's get on to some geek stuff. Houston got stiffed.
Please explain.
The space shuttle program has now ceased, as we know, and the 3 existing space shuttles were given to cities for displays, and Houston didn't get one.
That's bullshit.
That's bullshit, man. Houston, we have a problem. You know, so the cities that actually picked up space shuttles to actually like have on hand are Los Angeles, which has nothing to do with the space program.
Yeah.
This is purely money. You know that this is just for tourist dollars because it has nothing to do with the space program. So Los Angeles picked one up. Washington is getting one because it's going to the Smithsonian, obviously. I think Florida is getting one. Where is my list?
Why is Florida getting one?
It's where they launch, dude. No. New York, LA, and Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
are getting the space shuttles. Yeah. New York, which has nothing to do with the space program. Los Angeles, which has nothing to do with the space program. Washington, D.C., okay, they got the Smithsonian. We want to put it there. The original Enterprise is being relocated. That's used to be at the Smithsonian. Mm. They're getting Discovery, I believe. So they're getting...
So is the relocation couldn't go to...
No, that's going somewhere. That's going to an aircraft museum. I'm trying to remember where that is. It's a very, very famous aircraft museum. But Houston, the bottom line is Houston doesn't get one.
Yeah.
That sucks.
That's pretty crap.
That is crappy. Houston deserves a damn space shuttle.
It does.
All right. This is genius. I got to share this with you. There's actually 3 in the series. We're only going to play 1. They're very short. But anybody who's familiar with those Windows 7 ads where they go, Windows 7 was my idea.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's come along and parodied those to genius effect. Watch this.
Hi, I'm a trooper. I've had a lot of interesting assignments over the years. One day I thought to myself, it's a bit of a nightmare going door to door, trying to find the droid you're looking for. So I had this idea. What if we could just cut out the middleman and wipe out a planet from orbit? I'm TK421, and the Death Star was my idea.
The Death Star was my idea. There's one with Darth Vader, which is actually quite funny. And the last one, which is the killer, but it's pointless playing it on the show, is there's a Chewbacca one. Mm. And there's a stormtrooper in the corner doing sign language. That's great. So there is a link to go and have a look at all of these. It's a genius little parody. But while we're talking about Star Wars, we have two more Star Wars things because, you know, we're geeks and we love Star Wars. Now, there's a Disney attraction, which we, in 2007, we actually took Nicholas to Disneyland and he actually got selected and he went up and he did this attraction where it's called like Jedi Academy or something like that. And you get up there and they give you lightsabers and they put robes on you and you get to, like, you know, play with your lightsabers. And it's like this guy dressed like Mace Windu who's guiding you, and the Darth Vader comes out and you got to fight him and all this sort of stuff, and it's a lot of fun. Wow. And Nicholas was absolutely chuffed, and I've got photos of it, and he was chuffed that he got picked, right?
Yeah,
fantastic. This is a small video that Geeks Are Sexy put up. Now her name is Soraya Gallego, and she's this little girl who got up. Let me play the video and I'll explain. If you don't understand, I'll explain the video afterwards, but it's only 30 seconds long. But this is her at that event. This is just charming.
Stand here.
If you will not turn to the dark side,
yes,
perhaps she will.
I don't think so. Activate.
What's that?
you will? Oh, okay, we're going to activate. I didn't know. Oh, there we go. Oh, my God. So you don't want to fight Darth Vader? You want to join Darth Vader?
Dude, that's fantastic. This chick's like 6 years old and she's already figured out how awesome Darkseid is.
I think the Sith Academy's over here as he shuffles
around. You know what? Dad's sitting there in the background going, hell yeah.
Hell yeah, that's totally my girl.
He's just leaned over when she goes up and goes, just join him.
I just love the look on the host's face when he goes, pardon, what?
I bet that hasn't happened.
And I'll make you a bet the guy playing Darth Vader is laughing his ass off under that helmet. gold. It's absolute gold. I could watch that video over and over again, and I kind of have over the last 24 hours.
Oh, dude, that's fantastic.
Now, here's also a cause that you can get behind if you feel like, you know, getting behind another Star Wars nerd's big dream. Sorry, my show notes are taking a waddle up. This article on Geekology just tickled me. It's a group called AT-AT for America.
Yeah.
And basically this man has a plan to build a full-scale, functional Imperial Walker.
And what's wrong with that?
Absolutely nothing. What I thought was really amusing about this whole thing was he really wants to build this walker. Quote, AT-AT for America is a crowdsourced project that aims to build, no fooling, a fully functional, full-scale model of an AT-AT Imperial walker from The Empire Strikes Back. They've gotten preliminary approval from Kickstarter to make it happen, so it sounds like they just need some funding, plus a bunch of engineers from Kuat Drive Yards, or failing that, an alliance of Earthlings with a level of mechanical expertise equaled only by their hardcore sci-fi geekiness.
Goddamn right.
Now, what I thought was really cute was he actually wrote, is the link here? He actually wrote a letter to Obama. Now, where is it? He made this real, there is actually a link here somewhere. Oh, where's that link? You know, if you go to the show notes, there's actually a link. He actually sent a letter to Obama saying, we know that you're a geek and, you know, you're the first geek president, blah, and we really need your help and all this sort of stuff. And I thought, good on you.
I think Obama's probably going to be like, yeah, no.
I think he's probably laughing, but...
Freaks in. He's helping.
So you can follow their links. We have all of the... we have the link for this in our show notes. When the episode is published, you'll be able to find that. So I think that is genius. And if I have some spare money, I might even send it his way too. I want to see I want to see a full-size functioning AT-AT. I really do. Now, I'm going to skip that one because that's too long a story and we're running out of time here. But I do want to talk about this one really quickly, which is this World of Warcraft player. All right, I want a consensus from the chat room. Anybody here actually play World of Warcraft?
Because we may need some balance.
Yeah, we need some balance here. Everbloom, who is a Night Elf Restoration Druid, playing World of Warcraft's Feathermoon server, managed to top out their stats. This is from, I think it's Geekology again. Yeah, Geekology managed to top out their stats at level 85 with only one quest and not a single kill.
Holy shit.
Now, according to this quote, it says, all the player did to reach this level 85 was explore. An unbelievable amount of running, swimming, and searching everything in sight. Here's what the player had to say. Being on the ground and sneaking around, mining and herbing and eventually archaeology, going everywhere to get every single point of discovery XP that you can, really gives you a chance to see an amazing world up close and personal. I spent hours swimming around reefs and flying to the farthest reaches of the maps. If you like to explore and enjoy a challenge, I really, really recommend this. I've been playing since day one on other characters, and I've even had the original lore master, you know, back when it was hard, and I saw so many new things from Everbloom that it really made it worthwhile for me to continue on with this character, and each level was a major achievement.
Yeah.
I think she's playing the wrong game.
Well, no, not necessarily. It kind of proves how advanced the world itself is that you can actually get to
Delta
the highest
Knight wants
level.
To know how many times did this guy get killed, though.
I imagine a lot. I imagine hugely large amounts.
Mm.
That's
so,
insane.
That's insane. So they've been playing World of Warcraft for years and years and years, maxed out, top level, and never made a kill.
Dude, that is crazy.
I just kind of feel like maybe Everbloom should be playing Second Life.
I think maybe they think they are.
Freaking our chat room says, geez, what a loser.
That's a lot of time.
That's
and
a lot of exploring. Boy, that's a lot of time you'd have to put in.
Yeah.
That's weeks and weeks and months and months and months of continuous
online. I think we're talking a year or two probably to get that happening. That's so much work.
Delta says it's impressive but nuts. And yep. Freak says they should get a life.
We have a lot of things that people are saying about this right now.
Now, oh, yes, we did put it in Geek. I thought I put it into film. Okay, we have that email somewhere here, so I think we will read it after all because I forgot. See, once again, if you tell me where your email is aimed for, I can put it into the right one. Here it is. All right. This link was actually put in our show notes by Delta, but it was also sent to us by Damon. This is what I started to read at the head of the story, and I said, no, that's actually for tech, for film. But I did put it here. China has outlawed time travel. Actually, I found out it's actually not cinema. It's outlawed sci-fi TV is what it's outlawed. So anything on TV. Now, the reason for this wonderful, amazing banning is that China thinks that it basically distorts history, for one, and also promotes connotations of reincarnation. I'm not quite sure how that one works, but yeah. So
how?
Crave is where we got our original story from. And it says here, we're a little spoiled in America where you can make any movie you want and content you want with very few limitations. Apparently, China has banned time travel movies. China has reported that after the time travel genre experienced a surge in popularity in recent years, the country's General Bureau of Radio, Film, and Television has decided to put a stop to it. Publicly, their rationale is to protect audiences from crappy movies and historical inaccuracies. The time travel drama is becoming a hot theme for TV and films, but its content and the exaggerated performance style are questionable.
Right.
You gotta love censorship, don't you? Many stories are totally made up and are made to strain for an effect of novelty. The producers and writers are treating the serious history in a frivolous way, which should by no means be encouraged by anyone.
Has anybody ever done time travel on China?
Well, all I can think is, wait a minute, time travel movies are made up? What? No! Don't say it isn't so! Well, I thought they were fact.
Wow, and I thought our government thought people were stupid.
So Damon has written in his email, thought you might like this, it's a sad, sad day for sci-fi in China.
Yeah.
So yes, they have banned it. There is actually more argument to this. They're basically saying behind the scenes that they're worried that it does promote things like the concept of reincarnation, which of course the Chinese government is anti-religion, you know, because they're communist. And so there is thoughts about that as well. I don't know. To me, it is ridiculous. Ridiculous. Does that include games, says Freak? I would say if they're banning cinema and television, that it's going to be games as well, I would imagine. Time travel in general is not a popular thing.
Wow.
James from Melbourne says, if this is a tech show, can we talk about how fucked the NAB is and their computing system? We could, but I don't know anything about it, so I'm not going to.
We need to do research.
If I research it and look into it, I will let you know. Okay, but at this point in time, I have no point of reference or argument to talk about it. Weird food. How would you feel, Josh, if you woke up in the middle of the night came into your kitchen and found...
Every time you start these, I start getting worried.
And found the piece of pork that you bought at the shop was glowing blue.
I would seriously question whether or not something I ate during the day had drugs in it.
Well, apparently it's a real thing.
Okay.
And apparently you should not eat the pork that is growing blue.
I would tend to say that that would probably be already the case with me. But
this comes from, I think, my new favorite side called Slash Food.
Awesome.
And basically says that a story on China Smack. Now, I guess it's a Chinese website, but it's in China, in Chinese, in Mandarin, I would imagine. But some English translations kind of fit in from it and so forth. But this article basically says blue glowing. Boy, say that five times fast. Blue glowing pork meat found in Shanghai. And if you go through the article, basically a Mrs. Chen, they put it in quotes, so I don't know if that means they've changed the name or whether they're not sure, gets up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, notices a faint blue light coming from her kitchen. Now, that's got to be some serious glowing.
Yeah.
If you can see it coming from the kitchen. Only discover that the source of this ghostly glow is none other than the slab of pork that she purchased the day before and left on the table. And as they point out in brackets, left on the table? Anyway, second, it goes on to say, could this have possibly been? Is this a real thing? And some research from Slash Food has actually found that, yes, there are cases of this. It's a bacteria.
Oh, wow.
That can grow in some meats. And,
oh, really?
And,
from leaving it on the table? Well, there you go.
And it's iridescent. And this will cause it to glow. And if you've got that, don't eat the meat.
Right. Well, that's good to know. I will not eat glowing blue pork.
So if your pork starts glowing, if you go to a shop and you get yourself, you know, a McRib, and it's glowing, stay away from it, all right? Now, the other piece of weird food is not really food, but it was kind of an interesting article. And for some reason, the link's not working. Here we are. Biodegradable golf balls. Are nothing new. I mean, they've made biodegradable golf balls. I think, you know, the real example of this is if anybody used to watch Seinfeld, and there's that episode where Kramer was putting the golf balls into the ocean and then the whale got one stuck in its spout, remember? Yeah. So people try and make biodegradable golf balls because that way it'll break down. This one fascinated me though, because what's this biodegradable golf ball made? It's made from lobster. Apparently, it is actually made from ground up lobster shell.
Right.
And so it breaks down very easily once it's in the water, and it'll actually break down and is biodegradable. And I think that's great. So you go shoot 18 holes of golf and then go home and eat your balls. Did I just say that? I'm sorry.
Get out.
All right. Moving on. All right. Now, we're going to go on to Geek Picks of the Week. Now, I have to say, I've been really busy this week. And so I haven't actually done a lot of geek picking, but we are lucky because Delta found us one.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've got an app, so I'll leave it to you in a second. But Delta put this one through, and I immediately downloaded it because I love camera apps. You know me. I love camera apps. Hmm. And this one was cool. It's actually called SoundSnap, and I started to play around with it. And what it is a camera app for your iPhone that allows you to control the shutter with your voice.
Yeah.
So you don't have to touch the screen to take the picture. So you just activate the microphone, which I have just done. And then all you do, you can see there's a little measure. There you go. Just took a picture, actually, because we're being very loud. And then you go, hang on, have we got sound on here? Wait for it. Snap! Took the picture. And we could say, boo!
Wow. So it just takes a picture with sound.
Yeah, it takes a picture with your voice. Now, it's taking pictures right, left, and center, because as I'm talking, it's taking pictures. But now, this is the part that I thought was intriguing. Put it into silent mode. Turn on stealth mode. The screen goes black. Yeah?
Mm.
And it's still taking pictures. Snap! Boo! Snap! But nobody knows you're taking pictures.
There's creepy applications for that.
So you could walk around, and you see that pretty girl on the street, and go like this. You could go, and it takes the picture.
Don't do that. You'll get punched in the face. But still.
So anyway, there you go. There's now, the only problem I've had with this is getting it out of stealth mode. There we go. Out of stealth mode. There we go. So there you go. There's, what did I call this thing again? I think this is really cool. It's called SoundSnap, and it's $1.19 in the App Store, and well worth having a look at if you want to have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Did you have anything for us?
No.
Oh, cool.
I don't.
All right. Let me
explain. There will be probably a 3-week gap where I probably won't be finding apps because, unfortunately, the time I would usually spend, you know, having a life, I currently have a writing course, about 4 or 5 articles a week at the moment, and also having to put together video shows because everyone is overseas. So for the next few weeks, I will probably be very light on these sort of things.
Fair enough. So that being the case, we're going to give you guys an opportunity.
Yeah.
Because we both get very busy in it, and I will state this is a very busy week for us in particular. We've got a bunch of stuff on, which we can't talk about right now, but we do have a bunch of stuff on this week. So we're going to throw it out to you guys. If you guys have played with apps, this can be a desktop app for your PC or Mac or a Linux machine. It can be an iOS app. It can be an Android app. Just be aware that if it's an Android app, we can't test it. Okay. Send us details, though. Tell us what it costs, who it's made by, where you can get it, and what your thoughts are on it, and we will read those out.
Absolutely.
Okay? And we will let some people know what you guys are using for apps. Try and keep it to a minimum of 1 or 2 each, because if you just send me a list of apps, there's no way we can get through them all. Okay? Yeah. So 1 or 2 each. Send your apps in feedback@geekactually.com for next week's show, and we will talk about your apps. Okay, what you guys are using, and what you guys think are essentials, basically. I think that's the way to do it. We are going to end the show today with a little bit of history. This is actually a fairly long video, but I want to play this because I've abridged the beginning and end, but it's Linux's 20th anniversary this year. And the Linux group, the foundation or whatever they call themselves, have put together this video. It's 3 minutes long, and it's all a narrator. So for you audio listeners, it's a narrator. So you guys, awesome. And for the people who are watching, it's cartoon. So you guys can watch it with the narration. But do watch this because it is charming. This is put out by them. This is the story of Linux.
Our story begins 20 years ago. Boris Yeltsin was sworn into office. Jay Leno replaced Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show, and cell phones were really, really big. It was August of 1991, and a 20-year-old computer science student named Linus Torvalds sat down at his computer in Helsinki to post what is now one of the most famous entries in computing history. Hello, everybody out there. I'm doing a free operating system, just a hobby, won't be anything big and professional like GNU. It probably will never support anything other than AT hard disks, as that's all I have. Well, word of Linux open source project quickly spread around the globe, and developers from all over contributed their code. Linus named his OS kernel Linux and chose a penguin as its mascot after a little incident at the zoo. He soon made a very important decision that would shape Linux's future just as much as the technology. He chose the GPL license created by a visionary named Richard Stallman. The Linux kernel, along with the GPL license and other GNU components, revolutionized the computing industry with a few very simple yet very important freedoms. The freedom to use the software for any purpose. The freedom to change the software to suit your needs. The freedom to share the software with your friends and neighbors. And the freedom to share the changes you make. These radical ideas fueled its spread around the world, and somewhat paradoxically, its rise from a hobbyist experiment to the foundation of a large and thriving commercial ecosystem. Companies built businesses around Linux. In 1999, Red Hat's stock tripled as it became the first Linux company to go public. That same year, IBM spent $1 billion to improve and advertise Linux.
Does he have a name?
His name is Linux.
Soon, Linux was knocking out industry heavyweights and fueling the rise of the internet with its free software. In short, Linux revolutionized computing. But whenever something is this disruptive, there's bound to be competitive crossfire. But Linux not only survived, it thrived. Today, the kernel development community numbers in the thousands, with hundreds of companies collaborating on Linux development. Every 3 months, another version of Linux is released. So, where is Linux today? Running in 75% of stock exchanges worldwide and powering the servers that deliver Amazon, Facebook, Twitter, eBay, and Google. You use Linux literally every time you surf the internet. It's in your phone, in your TV, running 95% of supercomputers, and in many of the devices you use every day. Linux is everywhere. And the Helsinki-based programmer who started it all? He orchestrates this worldwide army of developers from his home office in Portland, Oregon, as a fellow at the Linux Foundation. As we celebrate 20 years of Linux, we can all see ourselves in its story. Thank you for being a part of its first 20 years.
So if you are an incredible Linux nerd, there you go.
that's really cute.
It's a cute little animation, though,
isn't
it?
I've had three Linux computers in my life, and it's nice to sort of realize that there is such a great part of
the world. Underestimate how strong Linux actually is. Yes, it doesn't have a very high market share or percentage of desktop machines, but it is behind the scenes everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's the thing. It is, as I say, it's powering basically the network that we know as the internet, because it is Unix-like, but doesn't carry the same licensing fees that Unix carries.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's an amazing app. Look, I'm not about to shift my desktops to Linux machines. I've played with Linux. I've tried Linux. It's not really my thing, but I can appreciate the artistry behind the coding that is Linux.
Yeah. Linux is one of those things where to get into it requires a lot of effort, but for people that need to do things that are possibly outside ecosystems that are larger, it works, and it can be a very stable system. Yeah.
Yeah, stable. what is it? James Milburn says, is that Dave's hat? Yeah, the red hat is the same kind of hat. It's a fedora. And James Milburn also says, not James Milburn. Freak says, it's a sneaky little OS.
Oh,
it?
Yes. It's like a cockroach. You can't kill it, and it's always there.
You betcha. All right. If you enjoyed this show, or you didn't enjoy this
show. I hope you did. I'm sorry if we've been a bit all over the place. It's been that kind of a week.
It has been. But you know what? It's kind of what makes us us. Next week, we will also resume opening the phone lines. I actually did set up the phone lines to take calls today, but we kind of ran all over the place, so we didn't really get a point. But and we will try and get that special episode up about the debate of online app stores. It really comes down to a debate on e-commerce, but we'll keep it to app stores. Send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com, or you can leave a voicemail, Sydney number 0280113167, or our Skype ID is geekactually. You might want to put in a request prior to the show to get on our call list, because I think you need to be on our call list to actually use the Geek Actually. We've been able to prove anybody who puts us on the call list, though. So it's not my personal Skype, so I don't mind putting everybody on there, and that way you'll be able to use Skype. Mm-hmm. I should just unlock it is what I should do. But that's how you send your... Now, as I said about the feedback, if you want to send us stuff about your apps, or if you want to send us stuff that you find, just put in the subject line that it is for Geek Actually, not Film Actually, or alternatively, the other way around, in the subject line, so that we know what it is, what show to put it into. Mm-hmm. You can also get merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter, do all those wonderful things. If you go to geekactually.com, there's a follow us link. Click on that button, and you'll get a list of things. And you can follow us on all our various social networks and so forth that we're around. Mm-hmm. You can watch us record this show live, and you can see us struggling to put headphones in and everything else that happens
on
this show.
Not being ready to go and running around chaotically like monkeys.
Oh, hello. Start playing videos that I shouldn't be playing. So I was actually trying to turn that off, is what I was trying to turn off. All right, so you can do all that by going to geekactually.com/live. We start typically every Saturday at 12 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. That's UTC+10. Mm-hmm. If you are outside of the Australian time zone, you can look it up quite easily. It is roughly, I think, something like 5 or 6 o'clock Friday evening. So you can see we record two shows back to back. Film Actually is coming up next. So Film Actually's start time is dependent on when we finish Geek Actually, but generally it's about an hour to an hour and a half long. Now, I think that's all my plugging. I've got a couple of friends we want to plug, but before I do that, I think you need to sell something.
RawDLC.com. Go over and check it out. There is a bunch of content going to come up very soon. We have some very interesting new things dropping. We have taken a week off, which is why the site has been empty, but it is about to bloom back into life, and my God, noises are happening everywhere.
Oh, it's a contact request.
Anyway, so apart from that, also two things. We are about to launch a video show on iTunes. There will be more information about that very soon. But also we have a fan page, DLC hyphen. What's the middle one? Hyphen? No.
Hyphen, yeah.
Yep. DLC hyphen live. DLC hyphen live. Go over and please like the page, because if you like the page, if we get over 25, we can get started with giving it a domain and so on and so forth. And of course, just so that you can keep up to date with everything that we do. So,
and if you haven't joined our fan page, remember, Geek actually has a fan page too.
Yes, so, but lots of people are on that.
Yeah, there's a few. We can have more, but you can always have more.
You can always
more
have
more power. James Milburn says, if you join us live, you can watch us being late, kicking mics, restarting computers, looking confused, drinking coffee, taking a piss.
Be nice.
James, behave. All right, so that's your Raw DLC. We also have our friends over at WeekendRonan.com. That's the Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies. They do a movie podcast where they drink tequila. We'll talk more about this in the film show, but they are a lot of fun to listen to. Check them out. You can go to WeekendRonan.com or search for them on iTunes, R-E-E-L. And we should also, we would be remiss if we didn't mention a couple behind-the-scenes people. First of all, thank you very much to Delta Knight, or David Murray, as his real name would be, for doing our show links and doing our research for us. Josh Spencer for doing our cover artwork for us. You can find out more about him at tackninja.blogspot.com.
I'm loving having your design on a little badge, which I have.
Yes, we've got little one-inch pins available in the Cafe Press site now. They're fantastic.
What is the Cafe Press site,
Dave? cafepress.com.au/geekactually. And that link is also in that follow us link, so you can find it there on geekactually.com. And our last thank you has got to go out to Grant Noy, who supplies us with that fabulous opening theme that we play. He wrote that originally for another podcast, but we have grabbed it.
Stolen it. Taken it. Used it.
And we use it for us. And Grant Noy, thank you very much. And for those who don't know who Grant Noy is, he also does a lot of game reviewing for geekactually.com. He's a fun read.
He's an awesome reader.
He writes under the name of Stubby. So do check out Check out his reviews. He's a lot of fun to read. That's it. We're done. We're going to get out of here. We're going to attempt something new here, and that's always dangerous, I know. But I have some credits and music, and I don't know if this is going to work. We're going to try this. We're going to see if this works. Great. We're going out, and we'll say goodbye. And if it doesn't work, well, we'll still be here futzing around for a while. So as Delta Knight would always like to say, geek on, everybody, and we will see you all next week. Bye, everybody. We'll be right back.